this work can be too much for people, even the best ones. It's just that somewhere, I don't exactly know how, something got lost.
I mean, we don't even really know who you are yet.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, what kind of comic are you? Are you a planter or a stalker?
Stalker.
Why are you in my house?
I wanted to see you.
Why?
Are you a music lover?
Yeah. Yeah, I consider myself. Yeah, I work with a friend of mine. He's a rapper.
Rap? There's a funny one.
I'll admit it, but I'm proud of you lot. You're my family. The men who helped me slaughter the Starks at the Red Wedding.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now.
Well, American TV's Night of Nights, the Emmys, is just over a week away. And while there's always some familiar names dominating the nominations, there is a sense this year that the voters may be in more of a mood to recognise some new winners. In fact, there's already one new winner. That's Netflix, beating HBO with the most Emmy nominations, scoring 112 nominations to HBO's 108. This is the first time HBO hasn't led all nominees in 18 years. Joining me to give us her take is TV critic with Vulture, Jen Chaney. Hi, Jen. Welcome to The Hub on Screen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, overall, the most nominated dramas are, I mean, these are recognisable names, very familiar titles, Game of Thrones and Westworld, which have 22 and 21 nominations, respectively, followed by The Handmaid's Tale with 20. I mean, with numbers like that, the Emmys can seem like a repetitive exercise, a closed shop between the big ratings shows. Do you agree that that's a problem with the Emmys?
I do think it's a bit of a problem, just on that note of being repetitive. I mean, if you look at, historically speaking, just in the outstanding drama category, since we were just talking about that, a lot of the same shows get nominated every year over and over and over again. It's almost like they're Xeroxing what they did the year before and just handing it in again. Last year was a bit of a switch because there were a number of first time out dramas that got nominated, like This Is Us and Westworld and Stranger Things. But they're all in there again for their second seasons. So a show like Killing Eve, for example, which is a really great breakout drama that I personally was hoping would make it in there, it didn't, because there just wasn't room because there was so much redundancy from the year before. So it is very difficult to break into the categories.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Killing Eve in a moment, one of my favorites from the year so far as well. But I want to ask you about The Americans, which is in the running for Outstanding Drama Series. People were so impressed by the way that The Americans wrapped up finally. Do you think that this is the year that The Americans might take out Best Drama? Because it did wow critics with its finale, didn't it?
It certainly did. It definitely wowed me. You know, I mean, I think its toughest competitors are The Handmaid's Tale, which won last year, and then Game of Thrones, which was out of contention the year before because it didn't have a new season that aired in the qualifying time period. But the 2 years prior to that, Game of Thrones did win. But I think, and I hope that Emmy voters recognize that they really kind of missed out on awarding the show and should have nominated it more times than they did. And having seen it go out, as you said, on such a strong note, that will win Best Drama. But I'm not 100% confident that that's what's going to happen, but I certainly hope it does.
What do you think they'd be rewarding if they do give it to the Americans? I mean, why is it important, do you think, to sort of reward this show for the way that it closed off?
Well, I think, I mean, this was the kind of show that took a really recognized genre, a spy thriller, and turned it into what it actually became, which is a family drama that looked at the dynamics between the people involved and was a real character study. The idea that Elizabeth Jennings, Keri Russell's character, was really the more ruthless out of the two spies, I thought that was an interesting gender twist. And then, you know, it's really hard to do a last season that ties up everything in a way that's satisfying, but also leaves certain things open. And I just thought they just did it everything just right. I mean, it was just emotional. It had some surprises in that last episode, but just felt very much in keeping with the spirit of the whole show.
You mentioned gender twist. Let's talk about Killing Eve now, this remarkable detective thriller. It's also a kind of serial killer series as well. Sandra Oh, of course, nominated. for, I mean, she's made history as the first Asian woman to be nominated for a lead actress Emmy. Will she win?
You know, I'm not sure if she will win. I would love to see her win. I think she has some difficult competition from last year's winner, Elizabeth Moss. You know, I think The Handmaid's Tale, in a lot of categories, what it has going for it is the sense that it is very timely, you know, and you still see people using the imagery from The Handmaid's Tale to comment on what's going on in global and American politics. And I think that gives the show a certain heft. You know, I also think Kerry Russell, again, if they really go on an American's kick and feel like they should have recognized that show and these actors and are remiss in doing so, then it's very possible Kerry Russell could win. So, yeah, that's a tough one to call.
Yeah. I mean, I do think Sandra Oh, I mean, it's a strange thing that the show was kind of snubbed for, you know, best series, best drama series in a way, because I think in some ways it's, in terms of the actors on screen, I think it's more of an ensemble effort than a case of individual excellence somehow, if that makes sense. Killing Eve, at least, I think Killing Eve, the it's sort of the writing and the overall execution, the sort of greater than the sum of its parts that I think makes it so great. I'm not sure if you agree.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, again, to go back to something I was alluding to before, just that's another show that's taking a recognizable genre, also a thriller, because, you know, it's a spy thriller in a sense, since Sandra Oh's character works for MI5, and just really steeping it in feminine language, and it just, even the way that the two main characters communicate with each other, you know, the perfume and sending her nice clothes. I mean, it's a very different way of doing a show that we feel like maybe we've seen 1,000 times, but this way is like, oh, I've never seen it like this.
Absolutely.
And it has a great sense of humor as well.
Absolutely. They really flip that antagonist kind of relationship in very interesting ways, and they become frenemies and more. Yeah, absolutely fantastic show. Look, let's talk about what's in the running for the best comedy series. This is an interesting one because with Veep not in the running and Modern Family not nominated after 8 years, for the first time after 8 years, not nominated, is the comedy series category actually more interesting than the drama series category?
I think it is, for the reason you just said. You know, for the entire decade so far, that award has either gone to Modern Family or it's gone to Veep. And this was the first year that Modern Family just got snubbed and wasn't nominated. And then Veep, like Game of Thrones last year, just didn't have a new season that was in contention. So that kind of opened the door. And, you know, you have some shows that have been nominated previously. Atlanta was nominated last year. Blackish has been nominated on more than one occasion. Back in its day, Curb Your Enthusiasm also nominated. And same goes for Silicon Valley. But you have, you know, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and you have Glow being nominated. And those are new shows, newcomers. And then also Barry.
Yeah, I know you're fans of those two, Glow and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as well. I quite like Barry, which is another interesting serial killer kind of... I don't know, subversion, a genre subversion. But Glow I haven't caught up with yet, and that's set in the world of women's wrestling, right?
Yes, it's based on an actual syndicated television show that was called Glow for the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling that aired in the 1980s. But it's looking at it sort of behind the scenes. And so there's stuff that is very, you know, corny and very 80s and silly, but it also deals with, you know, real character dynamics and real issues that were going on between the women, between the director and the women. And its second season, I thought this was nominated for its first, but I even thought its second season, which will be in contention next year, was stronger than the first one. So it's a really good show.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, another period drama, period comedy, but this time set in, what is it? This between the wars or no, just after the war, I'm sorry.
It's in the 50s.
In the world of stand-up. And again, very interesting things with gender. I'm new to this, but I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that show and Atlanta are the ones that are the real front runners at this point. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the voters go, because Mrs. Maisel has an its advantage. It's a female created series. It's about a woman. There may be a desire to, you know, recognize a show like that, given all of the attention that's been put on Hollywood to do better by women over the past year. And it's also in its comedy stylings, it's a little more traditional, whereas Atlanta is really experimental. Every episode is just something completely different. And you know, but it's also an African-American creator and an African-American led cast. And that, again, may be something that voters feel like they want to recognize. So right now, I think Mrs. Maisel is going to pull it out, but I would not be surprised in the slightest if Atlanta won.
Yeah, well, Donald Glover, of course, is also nominated for Best Lead Actor in a comedy series. I mean, I agree. Atlanta, though, does really seem like it really wowed people this year and well, in this last season, especially, for example, the Teddy Perkins episode was one of many peaks of television, I think, of the last year. So it will be interesting to see, yeah, who pulls out that that award in a very, very strong category. Look, just finally, does the absence of Twin Peaks, The Return, point to a certain conservatism? I mean, we have spoken about Atlanta being groundbreaking, but Twin Peaks, The Return was more than groundbreaking. It was kind of avant-garde at points, if that's a word that still has any meaning. But you know what I'm getting at.
Does the fact that it was snubbed, wild.
Yeah. Is there a conservatism in Emmy voters' taste, do you think, when it comes to real experimentation on the small screen?
Well, what I find is that they are more inclined to honor that kind of experimentation when they're giving an award for craftsmanship, so writing or directing. David Lynch is, in fact, nominated for his direction of Twin Peaks, The Return. But when it comes to awarding in the overall categories like Best Comedy, Best Limited Series, which is what Twin Peaks would be in, they don't always tend to go quite as experimental. And I don't know why that is, but that does seem to be the trend. I was sad that Kyle MacLachlan didn't get nominated for that because
he's incredible in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, me too. And but it will be interesting to see if they do send some love David Lynch's way for directing, because I think that was certainly a feat of direction, and he directed them all. So, I personally am keeping my fingers crossed for that one. Jen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming in and giving us your wisdom and your thoughts on who might end up victorious on September the 17th.
Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure.
That's TV critic with Vulture, Jen Chaney. You're listening to The Hub On Screen. Before I go, a quick mention of another film in cinemas this week that you might want to check out. It's beautifully made. It's a documentary called McQueen, just like Wayne, which I spoke about earlier, another one-name title. And it's about the late British fashion designer Alexander McQueen. Like Wayne, it's another story of a working-class boy who basically conquered the world in his particular field, which was, of course, fashion. And his story is, of course, one that's also cut short, tragically. Now, the film follows McQueen's rise from an East End kid who gets an apprenticeship on Savile Row, shows that he's really amazing with a pair of scissors and thread, and ends up basically taking the French fashion world and the often snooty French fashion world by storm, despite their suspicions. His heyday was in the 90s and early 2000s, and it's just a beautiful film that is structured around the different fashion collections that he put out, and therefore becomes really a portrait both of the man, his demons, and also the work, which is beautiful. So worth catching. That is called McQueen, and that's in cinemas now. Time to go. Remember, you can listen to the whole show or just your favourite stories anywhere, anytime. Just subscribe to The Hub On Screen wherever you listen to your podcasts, or you can listen on the ABC Listen app. To contact The Hub, you can email us at thehub@abc.net.au, thehub@abc.net.au. We always love your feedback. And on Twitter, you can find The Hub at ABCRN, The Hub. You can find me, Jason DeRosso, at JDRRR, or you can tune in to Screen Sounds every Saturday afternoon between 5 and 7 on Classic FM to hear me play soundtracks. But you can also just find me here at The Hub On Screen next week, same place, same time.